Hello and welcome to Growing Up B2B. I'm Ed D'Elia, president of D'Elia Associates, the place where B2B brands go to grow. For over 60 years, and now across two generations, we've been helping B2B companies achieve next-level growth through brand distinction, quality lead generation, and sales enablement. Growing Up B2B was created for family business leaders who are passionate about growth, legacy, and making a lasting impact. Whether it's a multi-generational legacy or multiple family members working together, there's something truly magical about blending business with family. And we want to celebrate that right here on Growing Up B2B. So be sure to stick around to the end of the show and find out how you can be our next guest. Okay, let's get into it. Hello and welcome to another episode of Growing Up B2B. I'm your host, Ed D'Elia. I'm the second generation of president of D'Elia Associates, the place where B2B brands go to grow. Today, I'm joined by Adam Blecker, former co-founder and leader of Seniors in Place, and now a Vistage chair, guiding business owners and executives in their leadership journeys. Adam's family business story began when his father launched a companion-only home care agency. Soon after, Adam and his sister and his brother, too, expanded into Seniors in Place, a healthcare services company that provided hands-on care and the foundation for growth and scale. Adam eventually bought out his father and brother, partnered with his sister to expand the company, and successfully led it to an exit. Today, he applies those lessons around structure, communication, and the risks unique to family business to help other leaders grow their organizations and themselves as a Vistage chair. Adam, welcome to Growing Up B2B. Great to have you today.
Ed, thank you for having me.
Awesome. So let's start with your family business journey. Can you tell us about the origins of Senior in Place and how it evolved from your father's first vision or venture?
So when I was 21 years old, I lost my mother. She passed away when she was 50. Sorry. And it was really a major fork in the road of my life. And it got me thinking personally about mission and impact. I was involved in three tech startups at the time. And it took me a few years to really get into a place of being able to apply that. But for me, it was really about doing something that was more meaningful, doing something that had mission tied to it. At the time, my father was running a companion-only home care company called Seniors at Home, and we came together to envision what we were going to do to make this something that was scalable, that we could actually really invest our time and energies in and help a lot of people. And that was really the kind of catalyst for doing it.
So when your father started, was there a sense that you would eventually get involved, or how did that happen? Like, he started this thing, you were doing other things, and how did it come together with you getting involved?
Yeah, so I'll tell you that I was very successful running the technology for three tech startups. I was living my own life, winning, achieving, and feeling really good about everything that I had created for myself and for my family. So it wasn't really in the cards. And then we just started talking about it, and I would help him out with a couple little things here and there. And then it just felt right. Things for me felt in the tech space, it just got old. It's one thing to be championing a product and encrypting data and doing that. It's another thing to be like changing people's lives and being able to feel that win. So it really was about making this transition in my own mind about how I was going to take all of my energy and efforts and put it into something that was meaningful. And my dad just so happened to have created something and gotten some legs under it that was doing that. And it felt very close to me. I felt like I could really wrap my head around it. But Ed, I'll share with you that I make this decision to leave the tech space. And it's the weekend before I start with my father. And I'm sitting on his front porch and we're just talking about things, right? And he goes, Adam, there is an office building that just went out of business in town. And there's this big giant dumpster and it's filled with perfectly good office furniture. We should go over and check it out. And so to give you a sense of the humble beginnings, I leave this lucrative tech space and now I'm climbing inside a dumpster, pulling office furniture out of it. I was starting to think, is this the right idea? Did I make a good choice here?
So that was your holy SH moment.
Yeah. Oh my God. Here we go.
Yeah. I had a similar one. It was, I think, my first month on the job, and I was looking at a P&L for the first time. And we're driving to a meeting, so I'm there in the car with my dad. He's like, "Here, take a look at this." And so I'm looking at the P&L, and I said, "Dad, why is the number at the bottom of the August column in parentheses?" Said, "We lost money in August." I said,
That's
"How is that a fact?" He said, "This bigger number next to it, why is that also in parentheses? Because
Yeah,
that means we've been losing money all year." I'm like,
that's funny, Ed.
oh,
That's
that
good.
didn't come up when we had this whole heart to heart about coming in and buying you out. That little chestnut didn't surface, did it? So yeah, that was my moment. And then I'm like, okay, we need to make this profitable. And that was the mission. And you probably embarked on a similar mission as you engaged in the business. It started to become clear to you that companion only care was, while the business had legs, it maybe couldn't run or run fast. And that wasn't scalable, that you needed to move more into a hands-on healthcare services model. Once you got involved, how did that realization come to fruition? Like, how did you start to say, hey, I don't think we can get to where we want to go with this model? Talk about that for a moment.
Yeah, I'd love to give myself a big pat on the back for this. Hey, this was a huge like discovery. It was pretty obvious, man.
Okay.
You're in there, you're in companion care, and suddenly you're referring people who very quickly progress into needing hands-on care. You're referring them to your competitors, and you do that a couple of times, and you say, I think there's another way to do this. The situation is it's a much more complex business when you take that leap into a regulated business with registered nurses and a nursing team and certified home health aides. And ultimately, we built a training school and an educational center. And it was a very different accreditation. All of this stuff was what we had to go through. But it was obvious to me that we were not going to, we can do this at a very small scale and have fun with it. But if we want to actually get scale on this business and have meaningful impact, we're going to have to dig in and do this as a healthcare service firm.
Understood. So at one point, it was you and your dad, as well as a brother and a sister, all
Yeah.
engaged in the business. So that's a lot of family members
It
in an organization. How did you and your siblings and even your dad, how did you all kind of divide roles and responsibilities as you worked to build the business together?
So my father did something really smart very early on. And he outlined the roles that each of us would take before we even walked through the front door, before we even accepted what it was that we were going to be doing. And I'll tell you, Ed, I speak with a lot of business owners, people in my group, people not in my group, but I'm always talking with business leaders on a regular basis. And you'd be surprised at how often the roles aren't clear. And so with family and partnership and business, I mean, it couldn't be more critical to really establish those roles. My father did it. He said, this is what I'm comfortable with. This is what I feel is the appropriate spot for you to fit. Adam's going to run this thing and we're going to go from there. And that's what we did. And over time, the roles evolved, but we stepped into this knowing exactly what our lane was.
And your siblings were equally on board.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, 100%.
That's pretty remarkable, though. And that being very intentional about setting things up almost to avoid a problem before it occurs. And you're absolutely right, Adam. A lot of people find themselves in the family business by asking a simple question, "Mom or Dad, how can I help?" And then you look up and it's 10 years later and you're in this business where, yeah, the role was never really defined because the initial intent was just to be helpful, be a part of the family. It's a family business. Okay, we're going to help. But now suddenly you're in a bigger role. There's a bigger organization. And by no fault of one's own, you're suddenly like in something that's maybe over your head or beyond what you ever initially anticipated. So I could see how being very deliberate up front could at least help make sure the foundation is sound when you walk in. And I'm guessing that it probably helped navigate some of the growth and transition too. If you could talk about that for a moment, how did that solid foundation serve you and your siblings well and your dad as the organization started to grow?
Yeah, I think having our own lanes was really critical. I think having in family business, the way I feel about it is that there are the normal bounds of risk that are associated with just being in business, right? We all, as entrepreneurs, we all accept that. When we take the jump and we make this an actual family business, those bounds of risk get much larger. And we're not just risking our money, right? We're risking the relationships with the most important people in our lives. And that truly is on the table. And so I think part of the journey for growth is honoring that risk, is recognizing that is part of the equation and being sensitive to it. And so that attention comes up in lots of different ways. At the very beginning, it's these are the roles, right? And do you accept it or not? You accept it, let's move forward. But it gets into much more deliberate, other areas that are much more deliberate as well. I'll give you an example, a partnership agreement or an operating agreement. So many organizations operate without one. And it's like mind-boggling to me that we would especially start getting legs on your business. Sometimes that's just forgotten about. We're so focused on the service, the business, the product, the quality, all of that, that we forget to mine the or take responsibility for what happens in a disaster. How do big decisions get made? And in a family business, I think we're more susceptible to there's love, there's trust. We had this handshake agreement. We had the conversation. Everybody knows this is how it's supposed to be. Okay, document that. You got to put the black and white paper together and get it down. And you know what I'll say in that regard is that there is the obvious stuff that you know you're making decisions on. This is who gets the business. This is how big decisions get made. This is, there's all the obvious stuff. Then there's the stuff that's not so obvious. And so you need an expert to take you through, like a legal expert to take you through what happens in death, what happens in disability, what happens if somebody steals from the company, how do we make a decision to sell the business, how do we make a decision to promote or demote somebody. And these conversations, as hard as they are to have, they're a lot easier to have when things are good, when we're all in this for good intention and good reason. Let's discuss this. Let's go through all the permutations and put it down on paper so this thing that we're building, we know what this is. We know where the guardrails are.
That's a very powerful point. And honestly, a lot of those things, it's easy to say they're not important. They're not important until they are. And when they are and you don't have them, you got problems.
And you got big problems.
In fact, in my journey at some point, and I just found out I was doing a little housekeeping. An old notebook piece of paper where, the final terms of the agreement between my dad and I, handwritten by me, signed by him and I, and co-signed by our accountant who was in the room that kind of to ratify it. And whenever anything came up, I'd pull out the notebook paper and say, remember this?
Yeah, that's right. That's so funny. But you know what, Ed? That's a really good point. And it's if you've got nothing, have that. Go do that. And I think sometimes we make it bigger than it needs to be in our head. This doesn't have to be the agreement that you have for 10 years from now. It'll be grossly inadequate. Get an agreement that recognizes where you are in space and time at this moment. If you have nothing, do something. And recognize that as you grow and as things change and the dynamic changes, that you can revisit it and rewrite it. And you do that.
Dovetailing off that, at some point in the journey, you and your sister brought out your father and your brother. Talk about what that process was like and what showed up as in that moment in the context of balancing really business and family in that moment. You're buying out two of the members that were driving the growth, and you and your sister are going to then take the ship and then carry it forward. So talk about that moment and what that was like.
I think it's one of these things where if you have a proper operating agreement in place, you have a foundation for what happens if this isn't working out, right? Somebody doesn't. Sometimes I speak with people in family businesses and they feel like they're captive, right? They feel like they don't have optionality. They're stuck in this family business and stuck in what's been described. And I think part of it is recognizing that there is economic ownership. I own a piece of what this thing is. And then I'm an employee of the business. And if I don't want to be an employee of the business, maybe I don't have to be. You know what I'm saying? And so going through all of that, and then in a very caring, loving way, having the hard discussions around what do we do? How do we help you achieve what you want to achieve in your life? And so it's that. It was having those types of discussions with my brother. And then with my father, it was a little bit different. He was getting to a point really where he was much more passive in the business. And it was just honoring what he had built, what he had started, and where he was in space and time with what we were trying to ultimately accomplish with the business.
Cool. And before we scheduled this interview, we had talked a bit, and you had mentioned bringing in an outside consultant to maybe work on some of these very issues. I'm not sure. But can you talk a little bit about the decision to do that and how that individual either helped influence both the health of the business as well as the health of maybe the family relationships in play in the business?
So I'm going to tell you, Ed, my very first Vistage meeting as a member, I attended, and I met the man who owns this bridge right here. All right. And he pulled me aside in that room, and he was in a family business. And he says, "Adam, I know you're in a family business, and I just want to recommend Dr. Goldbridge to you. She is a business therapist, and she has absolutely fundamentally saved my family and saved our business."
Wow.
And I didn't act on it right away, but I kept it in my back pocket. And as time evolved and things went forward, it became apparent that we needed a space where we could have a real conversation with each other about what we're trying to do in the business and what we're trying to do as a family. And this isn't like your typical therapist. This is a therapist that understands business as well. They're unique. This is like finding a unicorn. They do exist. There are people in this space. For me, in a family business, this was an absolute critical component to our ability to navigate this because it's hard. And that therapist actually kept a chair in the room for the business. And so we were able to have very real conversations and do it over with a rhythm to it and a flow. And I think ultimately it was that decision that helped us scale and grow, helped us navigate some of the harder discussions and decisions, and brought us together as a family. My family is incredibly close, and part of it was the journey of running our business together.
So just expand on that for a moment. So you're at a Vistage meeting, a member pulls you aside. You got to talk to this person. She's a business therapist. How did you bring that up? Was everyone kind of like, yeah, cool idea, or was there some pushback? Like, how were you able to bring that to essentially the leadership team, your brother, your sister, your father, and say, I think we should do this, gang. This might be good for us. Like, how did that happen?
Yeah, I think when you make a decision like this, there'll be resistance to it. For me, I would credit my sister. I explained everything that this opportunity, this person, some people knew about it. But ultimately, we got to a place where my sister just said, "If we don't do this, I'm not doing this anymore."
Wow.
It was that, like, we need to have a space where we can talk and get through some of the challenges that we're facing with the safety of a therapist, with the safety of an expert. Let's give it a try.
Cool. So just to give our listeners context, your brother and your sister, yourself, where do you all fall in age? Are you all very close age-wise, or is there
We are,
gaps?
yeah, there's a 5-year gap. I'm the youngest.
Okay.
My sister's in between, and my brother's 5 years older than me. Yeah.
So you were the youngest, and knowing a little bit of family hierarchies and pecking orders, yet you were put in the position of CEO. How were they okay with that? Was that when that sort of came up, were they on board with that? Was there any from your brother, hey, I'm the oldest, I should be CEO, or any of that sort of discussion, or was it accepted in your family?
Yeah, I could see where age has a place in this discussion, right? And who's the oldest and youngest and all of that. But I think that that's about family, right? And what we're really talking about is how do we successfully scale this business? It's not about the oldest is the CEO, right? Who's the appropriate CEO to run this thing? And when you have that conversation, you create the opportunity for what's the right thing for the business. And that was part of the decision tree in many decisions. It's like, what's right for the business? Because if we don't want to throw the baby out with the bathwater, you know what I'm saying? And so in my particular situation, my brother and my sister, they were very much on board with me being the CEO and running this thing. So it
That's awesome.
wasn't a friction point, but I think it lends to, if you're creating a hierarchy based on birth in the family, you might not be doing the right thing for the business. Maybe take a pause. Let's like make sure and evaluate this decision. Do we have the right people in the right seats? Are those seats well defined? Is everybody on the same page? It goes back to our earlier conversation around defining roles.
Yeah. I'm thinking of a business, and one of their members was on the show. It was two cousins and two brothers that came together in a merger. And I would often ask, how the heck do you guys ever make decisions? Because it's always, and they're like, no, because they did exactly what you endorsed, Adam. You're best suited to lead. You're the CEO. You're best suited to run biz dev because you're really good at that. You're the ops guy. You're the best at engineering, and you're great at finance and HR. They had their swim lanes, and they worked magically together. And you'd think that, oh, two versus two, you're always, everything ends in a tie. No, not at all. Everybody yielded to each other's expertise. They would have discussions, they'd have open discussions, but ultimately, hey, if it's a leadership thing, it's your call. You're the CEO. Here's what we think, but you make the call. And that's how they lived.
We're in business and we're entrepreneurs and we're trying to make big decisions and advance something. And I don't know about you, Ed, but decisions by committee, not always the best decision, right?
Not always.
Sometimes you need somebody that is just in charge of the direction and is able to make the moves that need to be made.
You attribute a lot of these early foundational, some of the early foundational work, as well as bringing in an outsider, as some of the momentum to ultimately scale seniors in place. Along that journey, as the business started to grow, what were some of the biggest challenges and maybe some of the biggest breakthroughs that you experienced as the business started to really take off?
I think I was in the home care space, right? The biggest challenge that industry faces, not unique to my little piece of it, but it is all about attracting and maintaining top talent. There are not enough certified home health aides. There are not enough nurses. There are not enough chairs in nursing schools to fill the void and the need, the tsunami of need of the baby boomer population needing care. So that is part of the issue in general. So that was like the biggest challenge. And it was running the business with scale, but maintaining our family roots, maintaining the family feel, care, and compassion so that the people that were there on mission wanted to be there. And we could attract wonderful people that stayed with us for decades and brought their families, worked for us. And it was not about making this some kind of corporate machine. It was about really honoring the family mission at the root of all of this and getting scale on that. And I think that was our kind of niche, right? Was that we had achieved scale and that scale gave us a lot more capability, but we maintained the level of quality and attention that we started the entire journey with, of being a small family business that was very passionate about caring for our clients, caring for our caregivers, leveling them all up, giving them the support, bringing on people that were mission driven, that cared about the mission, that cared about people, and creating a really good place for people to be able to do that.
So it sounds like a lot of work was done on culture.
Culture, yeah.
What kind of culture are we going to have here? How are we going to make sure that culture attracts the right people and that once they're here, they abide by the values that we've set forth to accomplish the mission, whatever the mission might be?
Culture is not something that we get to sit around a board converse a board table and come up with five bullet points and print it out and put it above the copy machine and say, that's our culture. That's not your culture. The culture is when you've established that, it's when it's really hard to maintain that cultural perspective that you make a really big deal out of maintaining your culture and you put it on display. Right. So like, for example, one of our mantras was to always put the client first, right? Sometimes that's hard. Sometimes you lose money doing that. Sometimes you lose sleep doing that. Sometimes you got to work all night to do that. And it's making those decisions in that moment where everybody expects you to cancel the client or do something different. where you put all the resources and all the muscle behind, we're doing the right thing for the 84-year-old woman that's sitting on her couch this evening, no matter what the cost, no matter what the cost in money and time and effort, we're going to do what's right for her. And people see that, they feel that, they rally around that. That's your culture, right? But it's hard making the sticking to it.
That's wow, that's very powerful. So the journey started, it was four of you, then it was two of you, then it was you and your sister, then you were scaling, and then eventually an exit. So how did you know it was time or the right time, you and your sister? Like, how did that happen? Did you talk about it? And like, how did that show up as, okay, it's time now? We've taken this to a point where it's time to exit.
The best time to sell your business is when you don't have to, maybe when you don't even want to. We were very successful. We were doing great work and we felt great about the trajectory and the journey that we were on. And over the years, I had established relationships with, I'm going to say, three people that were large enough in scale and time, a scale and size to potentially buy us at some point in the future. And they were just my friends, just people that I knew and was very comfortable with. And what was interesting is that all three of them reached out to me in about the same month and said, "You know, Adam, we should have, let's grab lunch. Let's have dinner. Let's have some conversation about strategic partnership, or let's just advance this a little bit further." And so those were my tea leaves. They were shouting from the forest that maybe there's something here. And I had those conversations. And one of the things that I learned from being in a Vistage room is that you have the value of your business is not like what you make up. It's not the multiple that you heard on the street. The value of your business is what somebody is willing to pay for your business at the point at which you're willing to sell it. Period. And so when I got into that situation where multiple people were reaching out to me, the other thing that I learned is that the market is cyclical, that the value of your business changes based on the timing at which you're bringing it to market, right? Sometimes there's a great appetite for your type of business or your industry, and sometimes there's not. And so that just gave me enough information to say, we are going to have some real conversations and we need a team around us to be able to do that. So that was the catalyst for me to actually get a team established, put a process together, and really vet out what's this really look like. And that ultimately led us to our suitor, which was not one of the three, but it put into motion the pieces to actually explore, is this an appropriate time to exit?
So once the deal was done, how did you feel?
And you would expect me to say, "Hey, like we accomplished everything, and I feel like the best I've ever felt in my whole life, victory." And I'll tell you, there was a moment where I packed my box in the office that I built. I packed my belongings and put them in a box, hugged and kissed everybody on the way out the door, and drove away from the thing that I had spent a decade and a half building, growing, and totally 100% invested in. And in many ways, I was driving away from my identity, who I was and who I viewed myself in the world. So instead of feeling like elated, I actually felt really bad. I had a really like hard moment. And that's not unique, believe it or not. Now that I've been through this and talked
No,
to
it's
other
not.
people, you know, some people crash and burn after they exit their business because they don't know what to do with themselves. They struggle with how they're going to live their lives and have impact and like who they are as a person. And I struggled with all of those things, Ed. I went through quite a process to take the win and then to define what it was that I was going to do with the rest of my life. And the way I think about it, Ed, it was like the ultimate calling of the bluff. How many of us sit in our days, day in and day out, and we think, if we had the money and the time and the resources, we would do this. We would do this thing over here. We would dedicate our time over to this passion project or whatever. Now you're sitting there with the money, the time, and the resources. What are you going to do? Now it's time. What are you going to do? And so there were a few things that I did in that moment. One is I took a very intentional pause. I think it's really easy to just let inertia just carry you right into the next thing. And I did not want that to happen. It's like you get to the other end of this, and now there's job opportunities, there is investment opportunities, there's people that want you to be a partner with them, there's people that want to sell their business to you. There's no end to the amount of opportunities that are available for you to just keep going. And the tendency is to just keep going because I just went 180 miles an hour before I sold the business. And it was like, abrupt stop. Let's press pause. I'm not doing anything. I took 3 months, went down to my beach house, threw my kids in the ocean, had a great time. I journaled a lot, read a lot, reflected a lot, spent time in my head, gave myself space to think and the freedom to think and to ultimately carve out my ideal life. What do I want it to be? What do I want it to look like? Who do I want to be as a man, as a father? Who do I want to be professionally? What's going to stimulate me? What's going to give me that feeling of mission and impact? What am I really good at that I love to do? What am I really good at that I don't love doing? Let's not do those things. Let's establish these guardrails. And that was the process for me. It was stop and then go. And when I decided to move forward and say, all right, I'm going to put some intention around my next step. What I did, Ed, is I rented an office at a Regis, like a little 100 square foot office. I got up, I got dressed, I drove to work, I said hi to the receptionist, and I sat in an office without knowing what I was going to do. But what it was, I turned it into a job. I said, you know what? I'm going to spend time, intentional time, exploring it all. Let's really start to explore all the opportunities that are before me. And make a decision over time that what's going to fit my personality, my ideal life model best. So that's what I did.
And that period of reflection led you to, or back to, I should say, Vistage,
Yep,
and
it
ultimately a
did.
role as a Vistage chair. So how did that manifest as, okay, this is what I'm setting out to do?
Yeah. I mean, I went through a lot of different iterations of stuff. I was looking at businesses that I could buy. I was meeting with owners of businesses that I could partner with. I was meeting with franchise developers to see if I could be an area developer for a franchise system that maybe had some mission tied to it. I was offered job opportunities. I was not looking for a job. I was thinking about things that I could maybe raise capital around, some ideas that I had that could really help in the home care space. I had all these different ideas floating. And I was starting to just dig into each one of those in an intentional way. And then I talked to a couple of chair friends of mine, and one of them said, Adam, why don't you go to Chair Academy? You got something to learn. Go learn something. And I was like, you know what? I kind of like the idea of that because it allowed me to research it and feel it and get a sense of what is this really? And then I met some chairs that had some scale on their practices. And so I just started to develop a sense that, yeah, I think at one point in my life, I felt like maybe I would be a Vistage chair, but maybe when I had more gray hair, but it was like maybe more like that time frame. But then I started to meet with people that were really having impact and were captains of industry, man, just incredibly smart, amazing people. So I went to Academy. I went through it. I felt great about it. It felt like this is home. It's a tremendous support network of incredible, incredible, accomplished business leaders. That's what the chair community is. And I wanted to be a part of that.
Awesome.
So I got like really excited about this notion that I'm not alone on an island. I have all of this support, great people that are now just lifelong friends that I get to be around and associated with and meet with and talk to and support. And it's my own gig. You know, I get to do this at my own speed and give it exactly what I want to give to it. So for me, I do 40 hours a week because that's what I want to do. And I enjoy doing that. I have tremendous impact with my members. It feels incredible. I jump out of bed every morning to do this work. I absolutely love it. And I get to show up for my kids exactly the way I want to show up for my kids.
That's great. That's great. So now, I guess at the other side of the table, being a Vistage member, then becoming a chair, when you look out to that, to the membership that's a part of your forums, what are some of the most common growth challenges that are showing up amongst the leaders that you oversee as part of Vistage? And how do you help them navigate those? So what's showing up as maybe the number one growth challenge that you'd say, oh, hey, a lot of people are dealing with this?
I think you have a lot of common challenges that show up in the room across industry. People face issues with people, with process, with technology, with people face what's my succession plan? How am I going to pass this to my child or to my key employee? What's an exit plan? How do I scale this? How do I build value out of this? How do I treat this thing that is honestly, maybe it didn't start this way, but now it's like my number one asset? How do I respect it as my number one asset and cultivate it and grow it? All of those things. But I think to answer your question more directly, the most common thing is this notion of balancing working on the business versus working in the business. I'm sure everybody that's listening to this podcast right now, if you're an entrepreneur and you're running your company, you are at some degree trying to wrestle with, how do I get to a place where I'm working on the business more and in the business less? And one of the real revelations that I had along my journey is that the less valuable I became to the business, the more valuable my business became. And so this is something worth wrestling with. It's something worth getting better at. And it's something that a lot of my members face.
And it's a challenging one, especially in the small business community. And I think you framed it very well. And I think a lot of people misframe that point of working on the business versus in, because the truth is, sometimes you just have to work in the business. It's just that the
100%.
circumstances are such. But I think it's important then to be self-aware. Say, okay, I acknowledge that. Yeah, I'm not doing the big thinking right now, but I'm doing what the business needs of me, and I just better acknowledge that, and that I better not live here for the
Yeah,
good of the
that's right.
business.
Yeah. If you're a business of 50 employees, you're not a stockholder. You're in
Yeah, for sure.
it. This is fantastic.
So looking back, and a lot of our listeners are at the crossroads, and shortly after your crossroads, you went from deciding, yeah, I'm going to take the plunge, I'm going to come into the family business, and then you found yourself sifting through a dumpster looking for office furniture,
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
which is a great story, by the way. If you were to give a young person, they might be in their 20s or maybe early 30s, who's at that crossroads, hey, I can go my own way, or I can, there's an avenue for me to join this family business. What piece of advice might you give them based on your journey, Adam, to say, here's some things to think about to help you make that decision?
I think when you are young and maybe you've just graduated college, maybe you don't have kids yet, you're in this very unique opportunity where you get to try stuff and fail, and it's okay. And so what I would say to any young person who is trying to figure out their way, go try, fail, pick yourself up, try something else, risk it. Take risk, go for it. You get like one of these. This is the one you've got. And the opportunities that are available to you as you get older, they get smaller. They do. They get just the perspective of things that you can take a big swing at gets smaller as you get older. So take them now. Go for it. If you are in a position where you want to join a family business, I would take a moment of pause. I would think hard about the decision. Is this what you want to do? Or is this something you feel pressured into doing? If it's something you want to do, then go for it. And when you're going for it, make sure you have the hard conversations up front and early on. If you're driving in your car, listening to this podcast right now, and you're in a family business and you don't have it papered, let this be your catalyst for sitting down with dad or mom or your siblings or your uncle or your cousin or whoever. And say, you know what? I know we've had a lot of conversations about what the plan is, but we got to put some paper on it. Get an expert, pay a few grand, get it done.
That's a great piece of advice. And I think you're right. One of my earlier guests, when I posed this question, he almost looked at me quizzically for a moment. He said, why are you putting so much pressure on? You're 22, 25 years old. You're
Yeah.
young. Go for it. So what? If you fall on your face, so what? Get up. Don't make such a big deal of it. Try. And if you fail and if you succeed, great. But so I think it was a very refreshing perspective because, you know, I know in my journey, for a few moments there, I felt like it was the weight of the world on my shoulders to make this decision or not. And ultimately I did, but it felt like a very heavy decision. And it was refreshing to hear from, hey, it doesn't have to be that heavy. Just try it. You're young. To your point, go for it. I think that's a great piece of advice.
And I would add to it, I think that there is, I don't know for sure, my opinion is this, that sometimes we make decisions that feel like they're safe, and it's actually the more risky decision. We almost over-index on what we think is safe, only to find out that that's not risk-free either. So you're taking risks no matter what, having an objective reality of what those risks are. And listen, follow your passion, try.
So talk about for one moment the most rewarding part in your mind from that transition from a family business CEO to now a mentor and coach. What's been the most rewarding part of that transition for you, Adam?
When I was running my business, one thing that was not as clear as maybe it should have been for me was just how much I had given it. It creeps in. It takes a little bit more. It takes a little bit more from you. It takes a little bit more. And all of a sudden, you've given it 15 years of your life at full tilt. And so I think on one end, I feel tremendous gratitude for the fact that I did that and I had that journey and I won. Winning is not guaranteed. And so if I had to do it all over again, I might have been a little bit more sensitive to what I was putting at risk and what I was giving the business. So that's one thought that I have. The most rewarding piece is to be really cognizant of that in this chapter and to be very focused on defining my ideal life and living it. So I get to do this in my way, in a way that honors the person I want to be in this world. And it's on one end, it was like, is it big enough? Is it enough impact? And the way I reconcile it in my head is that I get to work with, at full tilt, 36 CEOs, right? And I get to work with them on a pretty regular basis. But they're responsible for thousands and thousands of employees and families and customers and clients. And so if there's anything that I can do to help somebody at the very top have a bigger impact, have help more people, put more people to work, then that second order and third order impact, that's what has me jumping out of bed. I love the job that I get to do and the people that I get to work with. And I get to be selective. Not everybody is a fit for my room. Not everybody is a fit for me personally. And I'm a taste, Ed. I'm not for everybody either. It's okay. But the people that, you know, that want to work with me, that I want to work with, we get to do some amazing things together. And I love it.
Awesome. Awesome. So last question. If one of our listeners wanted to connect with you or learn more about you or more about your work as a Vistage chair or more about Vistage in general, what's the best way for them to connect?
So if you want to reach out to me directly, you can find me on LinkedIn, Adam Blecker, Blecker. You can also give me a call, 973-978-3166. Shoot me an email, adam.blecker@vistagechair.com. If you're, what I would say to you about reaching out to Vistage specifically, if you're in business, you're an entrepreneur, you're running your company, you need a peer group, go get a peer group. It doesn't have to be Vistage. Go evaluate ones in your area, where you are, find something that you feel good about and do it. It will change your life. To get to Vistage, you can go to Vistage.com. It's the world's largest CEO organization. Incredibly powerful model, incredibly powerful support system. And that's a path to go as well.
Awesome. Thank you. Adam, thank you for sharing your story on growing up B2B, your journey from family business founder to successful exit, and now to mentoring other leaders is full of many valuable lessons, not just about business, but about relationships, life, clarity, and purpose. Again, we've been speaking with Adam Blecker, Vistage Chair and former leader of Seniors in Place. And I'm your host, Ed D'Elia, and this is Growing Up B2B. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll see you next time. Adam, thanks so much for joining us today.
Ed, thanks for having me. Really appreciate it.
Same. Hey, thanks so much for tuning into Growing Up B2B. To explore more episodes and insights, visit podcast.dalianet.com. And if you've enjoyed this episode, please give us a rating or review on your podcast platform of choice. Having worked with hundreds of family-led businesses across my career, and being a second-generation leader myself, I'm on a mission to help every family business I meet achieve next-level growth for their organization. So feel free also to connect with me on LinkedIn and let's support each other. You can also find out more about my company at dalianet.com. Again, I'm your host, Ed D'Elia, and thanks so much for joining us today. Take care.